Namidam. That very day to you. Pravakshami. I shall explain. Yam, which Avocham, I explained. Pura, formerly. Anake, O pious mother. Rishina, to the sages. Shrotukamana, eager to hear. Yogam, yoga system. Sarva Anga, in all respects. Naipunam, serviceable and practical. Translation, O most pious mother, I shall now explain unto you the ancient yoga system, which I explained formerly to the great sages. It is serviceable and practical in every way. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord does not manufacture a new system of yoga. Sometimes it is claimed that someone has become an incarnation of God and is expounding a new theological aspect of the absolute truth. But here we find that although Kapila Muni is the Lord himself and is capable of manufacturing a new doctrine for his mother, he nevertheless says, I shall just explain the ancient system which I once explained to the great sages because they were also anxious to hear about it. When we have a super excellent process already present in Vedic scriptures, there is no need to concoct a new system to mislead the innocent public. At present, it has become a fashion to reject the standard system and present something bogus in the name of a newly invented process of yoga. End of purport. Tamimam te pravakshami yam avocham puranage. Rishinam shrotu kamanam yogam sarvanga naipunam. O most pious mother, I shall now explain unto you the ancient yoga system. Which I explained formally to the great sages. It is serviceable and practical in every way. There's no indication when that took place. During, in other words, is it a reference that during his life as Kapila or in some other manifestation, no indication when that took place. But yam avocham puranage, this word purana means history, or here is ancient history. This is a season. I was just in Tennessee and a whole class of kids went to Washington, D.C. on their end of the year pilgrimage to Washington. And I asked what was the best part, the Museum of Natural History. I said, I guess you didn't go to the Air and Space Museum. Anyway, there's history, not only in nature, but there's history in this presentation of the science of perfect knowledge. And here Lord Kapila is indicating that you're asking, so I'll present that which is very, very ancient historically it was presented before. Something similar, Shukadev Goswami, when he's asked by Maharaj Parikshit to describe in more detail about Lord Ramachandra, he specifically says, there are many versions of the life of Lord Ramachandra, and I'll only speak from the authorized ones. Meaning, even at the time of Shukadev Goswami, there were unauthorized ones. So, do some quick math and say that over a few 100,000 years, 5,000 of them being the advancement of Kali Yuga, one might guess that there's more unauthorized versions of Ramachandra's life than there were at the time Shukadev Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam. So, a discriminating individual, we're trying to encourage that each devotee become discriminating on this point, where we hear from. Because sometimes, maybe not from this group, but maybe somebody that you come in contact with in the course of your life, they're not so discriminating, and they're thinking, what's the harm? It's about Krishna. It's about Ram. And that's pure. He's Ram. He's the pure personality of Godhead. Why we shouldn't go here and go there and go here and go there and go here and go there and go here and go there? Because it's a smorgasbord of different things about Krishna and Ram. Or the yoga system. But even Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Kapila is the same personality in any manifest form. But Krishna in Bhagavad Gita speaks something and says, and this is as it is described in Vedanta Sutra. So, with reference to the authoritative presentation, one can then go forward with confidence. And without reference to the authoritative version, one shouldn't go forward at all. Neither should one hear, nor should one speak without reference to authoritative version. This is the emphasis that Prabhupada is making in the purport. It's a fashion. Hey, it's Kali Yuga. There's all kinds of fashions in Kali Yuga. Some of them we won't mention, but here's one of them. Make up a new philosophy and call it, give it a nice name. Call it Bhagavad Gita. Call it yoga. Give it a nice name. Make up something. One purport I read just yesterday, Prabhupada was describing one of the foremost scholars, he didn't give the name, but in some cases he's given the name, in current times of India, a PhD, a scholar, most reputed person, saying, not unto Krishna, when Krishna says unto him. Krishna says, think of me. And he says, don't think of Krishna. Krishna says, surrender unto me. He says, don't surrender to Krishna. It was right in the purport, it wasn't just in the lecture. And therefore Prabhupada would use this word, raskalam. Mayaya parita jnana asuri vibhavam ashrita. Not complimentary. But it's not nice what they're doing either. And an innocent person may think, oh, let's look at this nice philosophy. Let's read this book. Let's read that book. So the caution is there in the teaching of Rupa Goswami not to read too many books, with the idea that by reading many books then I can have new embellishments and speak something new. Somebody hasn't heard this, someone hasn't heard that. Rather than seeking a pure transmission of the message, something is attractive over here and something is attractive over there. One devotee requested me one time to, when I went to India, if I could bring back an chronic encyclopedia. I asked, what do you want that for? So I can know the references of this and that. And I asked, how is that going to help you go back to Godhead and reference this and that? If it's not authorized, you're just, you know, putting garbage in your ears. Why are you doing that? Well, I want the references so I know what the things mean. Well, the emphasis that Prabhupada is placing here is, in the purport, is hearing the authorized version. It's a refrain that comes again and again because there is this other tendency. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said about Mukunda, I don't want to see him again. Mahaprabhu was giving his mercy to all the devotees except Mukunda. And the devotee said, well, what about Mukunda? I don't want to see his face. He didn't say like that. We would say like that. Conventional language. Contemporary language. I don't even want to see him because he has this tendency of going here and going there and hearing this and hearing that. He thinks it's nice. And then he encourages others to go here and go there, thinking it's nice. I don't want to see him. So the devotees told Mukunda. Mukunda was very, very sad. Please ask Mahaprabhu, when might I ever see him again? In thousands of lifetimes, Mukunda received that word and began dancing. In thousands of lifetimes, again, we'll see Mahaprabhu. When Mahaprabhu heard that, he said, just bring Mukunda. Stop this business of going here and going there. Just stop that. I know that you have affection for me, and therefore I brought you here. But stop going here, stop going there. Just stay at the feet of those who are hearing this message in disciplic succession and presenting it in that manner. Stay there. Mukunda got the message. In the verse, Tam idam te pravakshami. Tam idam. Tam idam is a pronoun. It's referring to previous verse, the statement that he made in the previous verse. And the previous verse was describing, it's the first verse of Lord Kapila's instructions to Devahuti, because she just asked him, now he's just beginning to instruct. And the instruction is about the relation between the individual soul and the Supreme Soul, that which is most dear to each and every soul, is that relationship. It's not money, job security, and, you know, worldly position and distinction, or any of those things. It's the relation between the personality of Godhead and the individual soul. And with that, the complete detachment from all other things, just like anyabhilasha to shunyam. What? Jnana karma dhyanapatam, complete shunyam, complete detachment. Atyanta uparati, rati, means attachment, and uparati is detachment, complete detachment. So, like, asakti means attachment, and the opposite of attachment, complete detachment. Complete detachment. I mean, not like kind of detachment. Complete. We, as aspiring devotees, have some degree of desire for entering into our relationship with Krishna, restoring our relationship with Krishna. It always can be more, and the path of bhakti is to make it more and more. But the thing that holds us back, more so, is wanting to take our baggage with us, not being prepared to let go of the attachments that we have. At least, you know, our very special ones. The private ones, the very coveted ones, the, you know, deep-seated in the heart ones, whatever that might be. There's varieties. But this is what Lord Kapila Deva wants to teach, Tamidam, is complete detachment. And with complete detachment comes the byproduct of attachment, and that's distress, but also material happiness. The carrot, seeking material happiness. And it can be gross, physical, or supplemental, or even intellectual. Happiness. And with that comes unhappiness. It's just part of the package. You know, you buy a product that looks very nice, and you open up, and a fist comes and punches you in the nose. Wait a minute, it's supposed to be nice. I just got punched in the nose. It hurt. I don't know what's going on. Sukha and dukkha go together. Yehi samsparsha jab bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. It's just part of the package. Looks nice, but it's painful. As long as we're seeking that happiness, we're going to buy into the distress. And the whole thing is distress because it's abandoning our real happiness in search of illusory happiness. So, once again, we may have a degree of detachment from that, the part that really causes us suffering, but we also have a degree of attachment to that which is continuing and prolonging our suffering. Kapila Dev wants to teach complete detachment. But that's only possible by complete attachment to the Supreme. And that's what he wants to give her. And the method of giving her is this pravakshami. Pravakshami means I will explain. So it's transmitted through sound. This word pravakshami appears also in Bhagavad Gita, twice in Bhagavad Gita. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the knowledge of karma, action, and akarma, inaction, is a very difficult thing to understand, even by highly learned persons. Kim karma kim akarmadi akarmeti kalayo api atra mohita. Even learned persons become mohita, become bewildered when they try to understand this subject. Action and inaction. But then Krishna says, I'm going to explain it. Tate karma pravakshami yaj yatva mokshashe shubhat. By understanding it, you'll achieve liberation. So it's not an easy thing to enter into. And it's not just a matter of reading a book. And then, okay, there's karma and akarma, action and inaction. It's not done, that's not accomplished. If it was accomplished that way, there'd be lots of people that could understand it, especially kavis, learned persons. But Krishna is saying they don't know, they can't. Very difficult. But here it is. And in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the same pravakshami is used. Idam te guhyatamam. Guhyatamam. Guhya means confidential. Highly confidential. Most confidential. The chapter is entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge. And I'm going to explain it to you. Pravakshami. Why? What's the qualification of Arjuna? Anasuyave. Because you're not envious. Because you're not envious. Not only I want to explain it to you, but you'll be able to understand it because you're not envious. Consider person A and person B. Person A wants to explain something that's highly important, very confidential to person B. And person B is envious of person A. Is person B going to understand that confidential thing? No. Because of his envious nature, he'll hear something else besides the confidential message. It will not only block, it will distort. He'll hear something else. But when person B is not envious of person A, it's not like, you know, big and small, it's just not envious. Then it's easy to transmit some message. Pravakshami. And it's directly through sound vibration. Little Bhagavad Gita lesson here. Chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita and chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita practically are parallel in their structure and their messages. The theme of the points, the sections of verses in chapter 7 and the sections of verses in chapter 9 mirror one another. They're very similar. And so, also the lead verse of chapter 7. In the lead verse of chapter 7, Krishna has just, in the end of chapter 6, Krishna has just told Arjuna something very high. You know, that the topmost form of yoga is Shraddhavan Rajate Yoma. Samay Yuktatamo Mataha. The beginning of chapter 7, Krishna says, I am now going to explain how you can do that. So the language that he uses there is Tat Shrinu. Hear from me. Shrinu. Hear from me. And in chapter 9, it's, I am going to explain. Same thing. Because one is broadcasting, the other is receiving. Please receive the broadcast, the message. But the message is not just information, because you can get a machine that can record the message. Now, where's the realization in the tape recorder? Or a recording device, digital recording device. Where's the transcendental realization? It's not mechanical function. It's a transmission. And the transmission is not, as I was 3 days ago, I was hearing Prabhupada explaining the same kind of cheating system where he saw one guru was sitting in a chair and he brought his disciple and he held out his hand, and through electrical discharge, he transmitted transcendental knowledge. And he fell on the ground, limp. And he was crying. And his disciple came, he was on stage, it was a drama. So the disciple went over to the spiritual master and said, why are you crying? I've lost all of my potency. I just transferred it to you. And, you know, people were thinking, oh, he's so magnanimous. Prabhupada was thinking, he's such a cheater. Where is the authority, where's the description anywhere in the real scriptures that that's the means of transmitting transcendental knowledge to a disciple by electrical discharge? Like a Frankenstein. Something imaginative in any case. But the pravakshami, when it's done in the way that's being described in Bhagavad Gita and here by Lord Kapila, there is a transmission, but the transmission doesn't leave the transmitter depleted. It's a transmission of mercy. And with knowledge that has the potential of realization, jnanam, big jnanam, when the receiver is proper. And so the next line, rishinam, shrotu kamana. Shrotu kamana means they were very eager to hear. Very eager to hear. But so was Devahuti, very eager to hear. So were the sages of Naimisharanya when hearing from Sutta, very eager to hear. Or Maharshi Pariksit, hearing Shukadeva Goswami, eager to hear. And it's not just so they can get more information. When there's one section in the second canto of the Bhagavatam I really like, is after asking Maharshi Pariksit, after Maharshi Pariksit asked Shukadeva Goswami, "What? I'm about to die. What's my duty?" And what's the primary subject matter for hearing? When he heard the answer is that you should hear Krishna Katha, he was eager to hear Krishna Katha, engage in devotional service by hearing Krishna Katha. The first topic he started to ask about, Krishna Katha-wise, was how does the Lord create? Now, a theist accepts in principle God creates, as opposed to the atheist who says there's no God and everything is just matter and combinations of matter according to laws of nature, and that's all there is. There's no God within the picture. Any scientist worth his salt knows that. And if you don't know that, you can't be a scientist. You just can't be in the inner circle here, because we make the rules, and that's one of the rules. All there is matter, and laws that govern matter. You got another idea? No. See you later. You can't be a scientist. Anyway, not only accepting that God exists and God creates, but he wants to understand how he creates. And it's not even just like, can I get the technology down? But it's an appreciation of the compassion of the personality of God in him, how wonderfully he's acting for his own purposes, which is the benefits of the living entities, his part and parcel living entities. He's eager to hear how the Lord compassionately does acts that are even of this world, and that's also Krishna Katha. So, shrotu kamanam, and following that eagerness to receive comes sense control, because you can't at the same time be eager to receive and your mind and senses are all over the place. Not only you can't receive, but you can't even be eager to receive. It gives strength to the position of sense control. Sense control, say it the other way, is not achieved just by some mechanical means. By mechanical means, do that for a while and put an interesting enough sense object in front of the senses and the senses go for it. And Prabhupada would give examples, Shobhari Muni and Vashishta and so on. So, Visvamitra Muni. So the qualification for receiving includes sense control. It's like Narada was describing his qualification in his previous life to receive knowledge from those sages that were visiting for the rainy season. And that was one of the qualifications, sense control. But in that sense control was also the eagerness to be in the association of these elevated souls and serve them and hear from them and receive their mercy. So another point is, here Kapila is speaking about, he's speaking to Devahuti, who's obviously a woman, his mother, and comparatively it's the same message that he taught to the rishis, who are, one might think, you know, they're up there and she's down here, because she's just his mother. But the same qualification is not based upon, the necessary qualification is not based upon position, but the eagerness to hear, the eagerness to receive. Or like Prabhupada would say, better a sincere sweeper in the street than a charlatan meditator. So, charlatan meditator means ones who is pretending to be something that they're not. And in that pretense of something that they're not, get some appreciation from others and then exploit others through that appreciation they have for them. Better, a sincere, simple person. Sincere, simple person. Just share this little Prabhupada event. In Vrindavan, during the time of the Krishna Balaram Mandir installation of the deities, Radhashyama Sundara Kornitai and Krishna Balaram, just after the deity installation, every day, starting the very next day, the pujaris noted that those that have been to Vrindavan, you know that there's the altar and those little steps that lead up to where the pujari room is, and then you go on to the altar. So every morning, in two or three clay pots, one woman brought Ganges into Jamuna water every morning. She went before the sun came up. She went to take her bath in the Jamuna, and as service to Krishna Balaram, she came and brought some jugs of water and placed them on the steps, which they could then use for bathing the deities in Jamuna water every morning. And that went on for some period of time, like a year, a little more than a year. And then the water stopped appearing. So the pujaris were very surprised because they had just become, accustomed to that. They just go outside down the steps and there's the Jamuna water with Abhishek. And so they began to inquire about the welfare of this woman. They found out that she had left her body. And then they reported this to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's remark was that for this very humble and simple service, this woman has gone back to Godhead. Everyone was very pleased and very amazed. He didn't comment on what her sadhana was. He commented on her sincere, noble service. He went back to Godhead for this service. So whatever simple offering unto Krishna that one can sincerely make, Krishna receives it and accepts it when it's offered in a sincere and humble way. So Devahuti is in that position. She's not a, like Queen Kunti, not an elevated Vedantist, a great rishi and scholar and kavi and highly elevated personality. Kunti was a mother with five children, and one of them, the sixth child, who she was not even acknowledging that it was her child publicly. So, so she's identifying herself as unqualified to understand the message of the Vedas. But she shows by her speech she perfectly understood the message of the Vedas. That was her expression of humility. And similarly, so here, Devahuti, she's not a great rishi, but Kapila Dev isn't just explaining it to her because, you know, to fill up some time. She is going to be, she's going to achieve the stage of spiritual perfection by this process of pravakshami, by hearing spiritual knowledge. And the final line here, yogam sarvanga naikunam. Yogam, the yoga system, is what it is that he's going to explain. Sarva anga. Sarva anga. In all respects. Anga means limb. So in all applications, in all ways that this knowledge can be utilized. Naipunam. It's serviceable. Interesting word. Serviceable and practical. We can apply it in our service, in our practical life. So sometimes there's this, I'll end with this little bit of it's something that can become a controversial issue, and then we'll have some discussion. On the one hand, don't change anything. On the other hand, apply that which is ancient and traditional in a relatable way to the modern circumstance. Should we continue just doing things in the same way, in form as well as substance, or should we recognize the times and apply things in substance the same, perhaps in a different form? Now, one answer to that is Prabhupada did the latter. But Prabhupada was an acharya. So he had the capacity. He did things that were not previously done without changing the substance. Do we have that capacity? Do we have the responsibility? Do we have, you know, how can we make those discriminations? Because we want Krishna consciousness to be effective and be accepted by people. But if we start changing the substance to make it acceptable by people, we'll lose Krishna consciousness. It's the pizza and pakoras issue. Pizza meaning liberal and pakoras meaning conservative. You can only serve pakoras, because whoever heard of Krishna eating pizza? We have to offer what Krishna wants, and that's pakoras, no pizza. Maybe ice cream, but not pizza. Because after all, Krishna was a cowboy boy and they probably figured out how to make ice cream. Vrindavan, no pizza. That's Italian. Krishna wasn't Italian. Anyway, we want to make Krishna consciousness approachable, relatable, accessible to people. In doing that, we have a very grave responsibility to not change things. It still needs to be naipunam, serviceable and practical, but not, you know, what Prabhupada is warning in the prayer word. You know, some distortion of the substance, fundamentally going against some teaching in order to. But now we'll go again in that direction, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur authorized his two sannyasis that were sent to the UK in order to bring people to the position of Krishna consciousness. You can even do things that you ordinarily wouldn't do, but for this higher purpose. That's a very risky position to be in. And Where there's purity, that's the force. And where there isn't purity, no matter how easy you make things accessible to people, no transformation is going to take place. So we'll lose and they'll lose. Or a phrase that Prabhupada used, this was with one of my GBC members who didn't understand it properly and had a problem. But Prabhupada said, there's a Bengali saying. Any Bengalis here? There's a Bengali saying that the art is to go fishing and not get wet. He was commenting that in order to extend Krishna consciousness to others, it's a risk-taking act for stepping out of our safety zone and into, you know, this very vicious material energy. And the art is to bring someone who has some innate attraction for spiritual life into the realm of spiritual life without we become lost in the material energy. When I was a very new devotee, I had been in the Boston temple for about 3 weeks or a month, I was getting trained up by a devotee named Krunamoya, a different Krunamoya than the one in the UK. And Krunamoya was a time when there was a lot of success in reaching young people, young Americans, in colleges, as I had come from a college in Buffalo. Rupanuga had gone there and started. So Krunamoya was going to start a center in Amherst, where there's University of Massachusetts in Amherst. So I was getting trained up by him to do his services so he could go to Amherst and start a college program, as Rupanuga had done in Buffalo. Well, he went to Amherst and he got Amhersted. We didn't see Krunamoya again. He became, blended in with the material energy. I don't know what happened, because I was a young devotee, and after the summer I was moved to New York. So when we extend Krishna consciousness, we must be simultaneously careful that the essence is preserved and that we're preserved, that we're safe in proper shelter. That means our connection and our sadhana and our relationships and everything. Where, we have our support structure well intact. At the same time, we want to, then I'm sharing some things that came out of the Bridge Preaching Conference. Some of our young Western people, and this also came to the temple president's meeting that Rai Chaitanya attended on behalf of the Chicago temple. And there were some presentations made there of what Mahatattva Prabhu was doing in San Diego and what they're doing in Boston. And, so it's reaching out to people where our interest is to make things more accessible to them, more relatable to them. And then, not that we change our identity, we become chameleons, we pretend that we're not devotees, and then a jack-in-the-box comes out of the box and says, we're a devotee. No, not deception, but just, being relaxed in an atmosphere that they're comfortable with, and being a devotee, and being that example of purity that persons who are attracted to purity can relate with. And then share Krishna consciousness with them. So how to do that where we're not losing the essence, where the form may look a little different? That's a possible strategy in Krishna consciousness, with the cautions already mentioned. So now, with that note of controversy, any comments or questions? Jitendriya.
I remember when they go out to the airport in full force, I think it was Irish
Not to take, yeah.
It's not only important to hear from persons who carry an authorized message, or who may speak an authorized message, but they also carry the root of compassion of the message, which is something that is not exactly perceivable. So if someone may speak something authorized, but you cannot see the... And so sometimes it can happen that just because we're a part of a compassion movement, we tend to think that we're compassionate, and we don't take the responsibility of actually being compassionate, like individually.
Yeah.
So how a person who particularly doesn't know, we won't be able to perceive that quality of a person. We can only hear the authorized message, but we won't be able to perceive whether or not the message is presented with compassion. So how does a person come to hear from the right source when the right source includes both components?
Did you hear the question? I'll try to say that succinctly. In the case of a new devotee that doesn't have the capacity to distinguish between the message with compassion and just the message without compassion, what is that new devotee to do? Because it's the compassion that's really going to add the effective elevation and delivery of that new devotee's position. Something like that. Like parents with a small child, they are concerned who their child associates with. And if there's another child that just says bad things, does bad things, you know, is involved, their life is involved with bad things, the parent is going to be concerned about even a small child associating with those other children. So they will be protective. Same in our association. Those who are guardians of the well-being of the congregants may speak some. So they're at the gate. You know, allowing things in and keeping things out. So there should be some appreciation on the part of a new devotee. Let me go to the guardian at the gate and see if my understanding is right, or where I should hear from. I learned a lesson in the first summer I was in Boston. There was that lesson that I learned was, I don't have the capacity to tell who's advanced and who's not advanced. Because there was a devotee in the temple, I won't mention his name, but I thought he is great. Because he did this and did that. And he was so together, and he was so conscientious, and so, you know, he was wonderful. And before the end of the summer, he was gone. And what happened? Gone. And then I realized I don't have the capacity to understand who's advanced, who's not advanced. So I better stick with those that do. That was my conclusion. So it seemed each devotee should have someone who in fact has the proper knowledge and has compassion. Take shelter there. Take guidance. Where should I hear from? Or where shouldn't I hear from? Is that all right? Something more?
Not more, you're thinking more advanced. I was just wondering, particularly in getting that first type of shelter, how do you recognize what is that first type of shelter?
Well, once again, we don't have the capacity. So there has to be some degree of trust in the leadership, that the leadership is someone who has that capacity. You know, there may be circumstances, it's possible, it's existed, where the person in the leadership role doesn't have that capacity. And that's very problematic. Because then the rank and file have to start, you know, speaking overtly. The emperor has no clothes. He doesn't have the, you know, he's not a compassionate person. There's one situation like that, and the individual brought it to my attention. This leader, it's just totally lacking in compassion and, you know, spiritual care of the lives of those who are under him. My response was, the way that our laws in ISKCON are set up, that person cannot be removed because of that defect. I recommend that you put together a proposal that can go to the GBC that says, this is a requirement for a spiritual leader, and detail it. And then it can become a law in ISKCON if someone is not of that capacity but somehow got to a leadership position. They can be removed because, it's, you know, those under that leader suffer. If not removed, corrected with some, you know, some clout. But it's a difficult situation where everybody knows except that person that doesn't have compassion that they don't have compassion, and they're in a position. Our leadership is problematic for an institution. Very problematic. So the converse is, those in the leadership position should have the qualification, or they shouldn't be in that position. They can do some other service, but they shouldn't be in that position. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much. Is it all fine, Keith?